8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, former Attorney General Martin Amidu fires another salvo. Is this going to stir the hornet's nest, or it is only a storm in a teacup? The National Service Scheme makes strides in the agricultural sector. How will Ghanaian youth respond to opportunities here? And Northern Star Tomato Factory faces another challenge. How long will it last? And our text line is 0264-418767. 0264-418767. You are welcome to share your thoughts on any of the issues we will be discussing. After being asked for misconduct as Attorney General and the Chief Government Legal Advisor, many thought that Martin Amidu will keep quiet. Mr. Amidu, days before his dismissal, issued a statement which popularized the word gargantuan. The former Attorney General has exploded again by issuing another statement. This time he expressed his disappointment at the legal representation of the state in the trial of businessman Alfred Wiremer, who at the center of the 51 million Ghana Cedi judgment debt saga. Why is the former Attorney General worried about the state's legal representation? We've been trying to get Mr. Amidu to explain why he's expressing disappointment in the state legal team, but his line is perpetually engaged. We also tried to get some reaction from the current Attorney General, Dr. Benjamin Kumbo, but his line is also off. Now let's seek some reaction from James Ejenim Boateng, who is a Deputy Minister of Information. Thanks for your time, James.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
What is your initial reaction to the issues raised by Mr. Amidu?
Well, I think that really a free society, a society guided by the constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. And under this constitution, we guarantee everybody's right to freely express himself or herself. I think that Mr. has exercised that right to freely express himself. As to whether I agree with what is contained in his statement or not is another matter altogether.
In his statements, he is expressing doubts about the strategy the state is adopting in the prosecution of the Wiremer case. So are you a citizen vigilante to be on the side of Martin Amidu or not?
Well, I do not know what citizen vigilante or vigilante citizen. What it is about. I hope it is not yet another introduction of another catchphrase into the Ghanaian political landscape. But I think it is instructive to say that Mr. Martin Amidu cannot take the moral high ground in this matter. Indeed, you would notice that whilst he was in office and even before him, His Excellency the President had expressed concern about the turn of affairs with respect to the judgment debt issue, which subsequently became a subject of investigation and Yoko finding. You know, when this matter broke, I think that the president did was to instruct, indeed, the Attorney General to go to court and defend the claim, which is why only yesterday this same team, working with the Honorable Attorney General, Honorable Dr. Ben Kumbo, were in court yesterday and got the leave of the court. We were successful in persuading the court to grant it leave, that is permission, in order to amend a direct of summons and statement of claim so that they can continue to fight the judgment that issue. These developments themselves are not flowing from Mr. Martin Amidu's two press statements, but because the president himself had taken that position long ago that the public purse must be protected, the interest of Ghanaians must reign supreme in this matter, and we must put Ghana first. President Mills has been mindful of the fact that the public purse must be protected, the good people of Ghana their tax money must be protected. And that's the position, you know. So I do not think that Mr. Matiamidu's statement itself adds anything new which government or the AG himself did not already know. We are confident in the Honorable Attorney General. We do believe that he do a good and diligent job with respect to this matter. And indeed, as I speak to you, this is a matter that is pending. I mean, a lot of considerations, several considerations have been options are being looked at, the civil aspect of it, as well as the criminal aspect of it, plus those other aspects that are yet, I mean, to be investigated. So we should just leave the court processes to play itself out.
Are you then saying that he has no grounds for doubting the strategy the state is adopting in the prosecution of Woyome?
Well, I think it's instructive to also point out that Mr. Martin Amidu himself was the Attorney General for close to a year or a year or thereabout. You know, whilst he was there, first and foremost, it's important to acknowledge that there are challenges, obviously, at the AG's department. There are logistical challenges, that's a matter that all of us are pretty much aware of. But it's also fair to say that Mr. Martin Amidu himself was in charge of the police for close to 1 year. I am not aware, I do not get a sense or any inclination from his statement, even though he's questioning the competence of the officers at that place. I'm not aware. You don't get any sense from his statement at all that he at one point or the other, he at any point queried any of these officers mentioned in his statement for incompetence or anything for that matter. And I find it a bit difficult to accept the issues he's raising. But I'm saying that in all of this, the Honorable Attorney General, Dr. Ben Kumbo, will be guided by the conviction of His Excellency the President to do what is just and right to protect the public purse and to protect the interests of all Ghanaians in this matter.
James, in his statement, he said the quality and commitment of legal representation for the Republic is very important for the success of the Republic in pursuing any legal action, especially the current judgment debt saga. Why should Mr. Amidu doubt the quality and commitment of the state's legal team?
Well, it is true. I think that good legal representation also goes a long way in order to advance the cause of action of the client, or that a bad legal representation, the reverse style is that a bad legal representation could also harm a client's case. That is true, that is correct. But I'm saying that, I mean, you don't get any empirical, any scientific basis at all for that conclusion being drawn. Because this is the immediate power attorney general who was there for close to 1 year, and he's not on the record as telling anybody in his statement that I queried Miss A or Mrs. B or Madame C, at so-and-so date or so-and-so matter, resulting from lack of competence or incompetence. You don't get that sense. So it's pretty difficult to accept the claims that he's making. I've just drawn your attention to the fact that only yesterday, this same team were successful at getting court to grant them leave so that the rate of summons and the statement of claim in this particular matter can end it. Again, only today, the Honorable Attorney General, working with the same team, managed to get the Supreme Court to get a ruling in their favor. I mean, I think that we need to let the Honorable Attorney General, we need to give him the free space to work on the cases that are on his desk right now. And we are mindful of the fact that the interest of Ghana must be protected, which is what has been sounded by His Excellency the President, following which we have seen investigations, we have seen people being called by the police, we have seen arrests being made, we have seen people go before the court, bail granted, and these matters pending before the law courts.
Just hold the line. We also have NPP MP for Achim Ebuakwa South, Samuel Atachia, on the line. Thanks for your time. How do you react to Mr. Amidu's statement?
Well, if I have not read the full text of the statement, but if the summary is right, that is talking about the competence or otherwise of the legal representation regarding the Wayome matters. And what I would say is that I think he might be saying that it should be the current Attorney General who should do it himself. Because I saw that before he exited, he did it himself. Apart from that, I do not see why this can be a big issue, because it's a setup, you know. The Attorney General Department is a setup where you have chief state attorneys and principal state attorneys, and they go to prosecute some of these matters after they've had their briefings with the Attorney General. But when the case is very big, but I suppose he introduces gargantuan thing. So he supposes that the case is so big that he believes that the Attorney General who should be doing it himself. And that is his opinion, and I don't think it's a big deal. If the Attorney General believes that he has briefed somebody sufficiently to go and prosecute the case, obey it. So long as the person is not shoddy and the person is up to the task, eventually it is the Attorney General who might have delegated his powers who will be blamed. Because if you send, a dwarf of an advocate to go and do such a big case, and there's any kind of problems, you obey it. But if you see this case as very, very, very serious, and you don't want any hiccups by reason of the antecedents, then you should take a decision. But ultimately, the man in the seat knows what he's doing, and I don't want to second guess him.
As a lawyer, do you think the strategy that the state is adopting will help the prosecution of the case?
Well, I can assure you, the prosecution, of the case, is a serious one. I don't have any doubt in my mind that they'll fiddle it or play with it, because the whole world is looking at them, you know. And I believe that they have confidence in what they are doing. So it will be in bad taste for me to think that they will do something untoward. But whatever they do, ultimately, they prosecute well, but the final arbiter is the judge, not themselves. So they should do it to the best of their professional capability. But they don't have the powers of jail or the powers of giving judgment. You should underline these things and knows when the power of the Attorney General ends. The Attorney General will present a case, but a judge of a court of competent jurisdiction will determine the final outcome. When we understand it that way, we shouldn't have any heat on us.
Looking at the names that Mr. Amidu stated, he worked with those whose reputation he is doubting. So can the AG descend on every case because he thinks it's serious?
Well, the AG is not supposed to prosecute every case personally. I'm telling you that the number of cases in the courts concerning the state, if the AG should be doing it personally, he cannot think. That is why there's a department, there's a whole institution called the Attorney General Department. So therefore, it is the Attorney General of the day who should weigh his options. Is this a serious case to the standard I should do it myself or delegate my power? That is a discretion he should exercise. But as I've told you, ultimately he'll bear the responsibility that it was his time, that probably he didn't believe he should do it himself. He sent X who was not up to the task, and you blow it. Because whatever they are doing, they are being watched closely. And I think let's leave the present Attorney General to manage his own affairs.
Mr. Tachin, by this statement, is Mr. Amidu not undermining the present AG?
Well, to a reasonable extent, you know. To a reasonable extent. Because if he's casting doubt regarding the legal team, then in a way he's insinuating that the AG's choice of lawyers is not what he would have chosen. That's what he's trying to say. He thinks that maybe he should do it himself. And that is also, a right that he can exercise, that he's running a commentary on what he has seen. So that also should not be discounted.
Mr. Amidu also raised the issue of time, saying the state does not have enough time on its side to substitute amended rates. Do you share that view?
Well, I didn't get that. What did you say?
I said Mr. Amidu also raised the issue of time, saying the state does not have enough time on its side to substitute an amended rate.
Well, by legal jargons, I don't understand how to substitute an amended writ, you know. I believe what he did, Honorable Martin Amido did, was to amend the writ which was filed. You see, to include the issue of fraud and also the recovery of the money. I remember the previous suit filed didn't contain these things. But that is what you have to do. You see, nobody can hurry the court, and I want to underline this. If people believe that they could hurry the court to conclude certain matters, it's a joke. It's the judge who has a timetable. And if the judge wants to hear the case day by day, it could be day by day. If the judge says, look, I'm so overloaded, I want to take it gingerly, that is the way the judge will manage it. But I hold the humble view that let the case travel its normal course, and then let them do what is expected of them professionally, and that will be all right.
All right, thanks for your time. That was the NPP MP for Achim Ebuakwa South, Samuel Atacha. Now let's go back to James. James, how do you respond to the issues Mr. Atacha raised?
Well, I think that, as the lawyer that he is, any senior lawyer will tell you that depending on the case that he's doing, it is not exactly the case that if you are a lawyer, you are handling the case, you've got to do that case personally. If within your human resource, you have other, lawyers under you who you think are competent and capable of handling that, nothing stops the senior lawyer from delegating the case to a junior, for example, to do that. And I think that is a perspective from which Honorable Atacha has spoken. He's spoken as a professional in him, and I think that he's shown the way in not making this matter partisan at all.
Will the state respond officially to Mr. Amidu's statement?
Well, I have just told you that Mr. Amidu's statement does not shed any new light. It does not tell the state anything that the state did not already. We are guided by the president's conviction that the public purse must be protected. We are guided by the president's conviction that the attorney general ought to seek the leave of the court in order to amend its writ of summons and statement of claim that is being done. We are guided by the conviction also that ultimately the interests of Ghana must override. And as His Excellency the President had put it, it doesn't matter who is involved in this matter. He will go to our laws will go to the bottom of this issue in order to ensure.
All right. Thanks for your time. That was a Deputy Minister of Information, James Ejinim Boateng. Also joining us on the line is lawyer Tony Forsen, who is a public relations officer of the Ghana Bar Association. Many thanks for your time. Mr. Forsen, what do you make of the issues raised by the former Attorney General?
Yeah, first of all, let me make this disclaimer quickly. I am speaking as a legal practitioner. That was the capacity in which I was consulted. I am not speaking as a public relations officer of the Ghana Bar Association. So whatever views I express are my personal views. Thank you.
All right, go ahead.
Right. Now, what is your question?
What do you make of the issues raised by the former Attorney General?
Yes, I've had occasion to express my view earlier on this matter, and I'm of the candid opinion that this statement rather muddies the waters, because I am firm in my conviction that the statement by Mr. Amidu should have served as a memo or some directive or direction to the current Attorney General as to the goings on in the ministry rather than put it in the public domain. That is my personal view. I say so because the statement has the potential of eroding public confidence in the office of the Attorney General, which I do not think Mr. Amidu, as I know him, intended. Maybe there are certain frustrations that he has sought to vent, but in doing so, I'm of the candid opinion that this overshoots the mark, you know, because the state is being represented by somebody. If it is your conviction that the person representing the state is not the best person to do so. I believe that he must have very good relations with Dr. Kumbo. And I would have preferred that this matter was dealt with at that level rather than put it in the public domain. But that is my personal opinion. Everybody has a different style because I personally do not like confrontational situations. And the public purse from which the Attorney General's office is paid should not be seen as going, if I may say so, to waste on public officials who do not seem to have the interest of the public at heart. Because that is the effect the statement has on the public psyche. I feel it's rather unfortunate because, you see, now the individuals who have been fingered at the Attorney General's department, they are still there. How does the public view them? If you had any of them as your lawyer in a case of this magnitude, and you were to hear that this is the person representing you does not believe in your case, I think it is a bit disheartening. You understand me? So, personally, I'm not too comfortable with the statement. I'm not too comfortable with the statement. And beyond that, I take this view that this matter has been, I think, unduly politicized, such that people are taking ossified positions depending on the political color that they are wearing. And I think that is not right. I think that the matter should be left solely in the hands of the courts, because you see, undue pressure is being brought on the judiciary. That is one thing that nobody seems to be looking at, because depending on how weighty public sentiments are, even though the judiciary have taken an oath to be impartial, definitely they are human beings. So I think we must be circumspect and rather give the court the opportunity to deal with the matter, and after they have dealt with the matter and judgment has been given, that becomes a matter for public discussion. And I think that is fairer. So I would plead, I would respectfully plead, I mean, maybe my voice may not go far, but I would respectfully plead that we leave the matter to the courts to decide. And when they have decided, rightly or wrongly, then the judgment becomes a public document and we all speak to the issues.
Mr. Fossin, do you think the seemingly media trial is affecting the case?
Without a doubt in my mind. Without a doubt in my mind. To some people, Mr. Woyome is a thief. To some people, Mr. Woyome is a saint. It cannot be possible. It cannot be possible because of the media trial.
How then should we handle it?
Come again.
How then should we handle it? Should we leave it as it is?
I believe so. I believe that let the court handle it. When the courts have come to their judgment, then the judgment becomes a public document. Then we are all free to say that, look, we do not agree with the decision of the court because of A, B, and C. Or we agree with the decision of the court because of A, B, and C. As it stands now, every judge who will be giving this brief will be under so much pressure. Because the judge is not sequestered. He listens to radio. He listens to TV. And public sentiments are so high, depending on which spectrum of the aisle you are. And I think it is unfair on the judges. It's totally unfair.
Can the current Attorney General invite Mr. Amidu to assist him in the prosecution of the case?
Why not? The Attorney General is at liberty to invite anybody whom he thinks has information or has knowledge which would impinge on any case to the benefit of the Republic. And I believe that if Dr. Kumbo calls Mr. Martin Amidu, he will not refuse. I know Mr. Amidu. He's a man who believes in justice. I mean, I have known him. He happened to be my father's deputy some 16, 17 years ago. So I've known him for quite some time. I do not think that if Mr. Amidu has material which will aid the state in prosecuting a case, he would say that he would not present it. Never. I don't believe that for a moment.
Thanks for your time. That was lawyer Tony Fossin, who is a legal practitioner, is still behind the news live on Radio Ghana and on all our radar FM stations across the country. This is Behind the News. Our text line is 0264-418767. 0264-418767. And these are some of your text messages. There is no smoke without fire. Martin Amidu should be taken serious. Sham Yundi. Martin Amidu should stop exposing himself. he should leave the judiciary to do their work. That's from AU Farouk Tamale. Baba Musa UDS, Martin Amidu is only playing to the public gallery to save his face after his unfortunate comments which led to his sack. Amadou Nkwanta, why should we politicize every statement of national significance? Amidu has set the record straight and we must follow suit to seek accountability. And Ayaba West Gunja says, Martin Amidu should take it easy. It is a process and with time, everyone will get to know the truth of the gargantuan judgment date, said to Wayome. Some time ago, it was described as national suffering because of what personnel had to go through. The National Service Scheme has had its challenges, but without doubt contributed so much to national development since its establishment in 1973 by NRC Decree 208. The National Service Scheme has offered many Ghanaian youth an opportunity to test work and life. Yet, how much has the scheme contributed? And with programs like the National Youth Employment Program, how is the NSS affected? How are they facing other challenges with postings and new areas of activity? And what are the prospects? We have with us in the studio today Vincent Kwagbenu, who is the Executive Director of the National Service Scheme. Many thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. Now, where do you place the National Service Scheme in Ghana's development aspirations?
Well, the Ghana National Service Scheme was established at a time that there was the need for the youth to contribute positively to the nation's development efforts. And I think each year, the response of our graduates from our tertiary institution to this clarion call have been very overwhelming. And I would say that in the sectors of education, health, agriculture, local government, and even in the private sector, they have distinguished themselves in these areas creditably.
Would you then say the NSS has succeeded considering the objective for which it was established?
Well, from the feedback we get from user agencies, I think significantly the National Service Scheme is achieving much for this country.
Has the scheme changed over the years?
Yes, over the years, several programs have been introduced and have been taken up by other statutory bodies. Like in the 80s, there was the primary healthcare program that originally started from the national with the National Service Scheme. We have the non-formal education that also started with the National Service Scheme. There were several programs like the Community Improvement Unit that was taxed to help communities in need of water and sanitation and many other important needs of the communities that the National Service Scheme took up and were embraced. Today you talk about a division at the Ministry of Education that sees to non-formal education. And the primary health care component is being ceded to the Ministry of Health. And so the National Service Scheme addresses thorny issues that come up because of its involvement in rural areas and communities that hardly are supported when it comes to human resource. And these graduates go to those areas to help in addressing some of these 13 issues.
You talked about several programs. Are they still in existence?
Of course, yes. Largely, for instance, education, providing teachers to teach in communities in need of teachers. The National Service Scheme, without the National Service Scheme, we would not have been achieving the result that we are achieving today. And if you go to the Ministry of Education and the district assemblies, they'll tell you largely that the National Service Scheme has contributed in addressing the teacher shortage that we have in this country. Remember, in the late 70s and the early 80s, when there was the exodus of teachers to Nigeria, it was the National Service Scheme that held the fort. Currently, we are not even able to meet the mandatory requirement of teachers, and that's why we have the voluntary teacher component that every year we roll up to help address the shortfalls in teacher supply in these areas. And currently you agree that you will see the out of the memorandum of understanding we signed with the Ministry of Health and the health regulatory bodies, health professionals across the spectrum are deployed under the National Service Scheme so they can contribute meaningfully in the areas that we're talking about.
And how have they been faring?
You know, the youth are challenged when they are confronted with problems, and they see those problems as theirs, and their response has been very positive. I would say that we are encouraged even by communities recognizing the words of our graduates and are helping them to provide solutions to those challenges that they face.
In recent times, we've been hearing of voluntary national service.
Mm.
How different is this introduction?
Well, the voluntary program began in 2003 when there was the need for graduates with science and mathematics background to fill vacancies in the three northern regions, especially in secondary schools, where there seem to be some shortages in these professional groups. It worked well, and we think every year as we get requests from the Ghana Education Service, we try to recruit post-national service personnel who have taught during the mandatory program and are willing to offer additional year or two to help schools in need of this professional, like the science and the maths. So there have been overwhelming support, and in terms of registering to engage in the program. Nevertheless, also we have seen some challenges in our youth's bid to get enrolled on the program. We are not able to meet the requirement by way of people trying to abuse the voluntary program. People who do not qualify want to use other means to get on the program. But with the support of the stakeholders, I think we are not doing badly at all.
Then who qualifies to be on the voluntary national service?
As I said earlier, to qualify to work under our voluntary program, you should be a graduate that should have completed a tertiary institution and have completed your mandatory national service. And the other area we look at is the professional teachers that have retired from the Ghana Education Service but are still active and think that they can contribute to teaching and learning in our schools. So these are the two broad qualifications that we look at. You must have completed your mandatory service, and you must have retired but active and still willing to offer some additional years in a classroom.
As an organization, what has been your main challenge or challenges?
Well, challenges are very numerous. One of the challenges is the influence of very prominent people in society to get the awards or to get people who confront them or who come to them for assistance. That has been breaking our back. And anybody who sits in my seat will tell you, my predecessors will tell you, that sometimes when it comes to posting, they are incommunicado. They are not seen and they are not heard. Because, you know, in Ghana, it is the influential people who send the awards to the university, and the poor hardly have the awards attending university. So these are the people who will come to your office and demand that the awards should be sent to Accra or GBC instead of they going to Prapra-Bebida to support the community there. So these challenges come up every year. But I think with the support of GBC and other media houses and the stakeholders that we meet often, the public education is sinking, and the enthusiasm of our graduates to support communities that I mentioned are rising. I think that we very soon overcome some of this.
when faced with such challenges, as in a well-to-do person will bring their daughter or son and say, my son has been posted to Bimbila and I want the person to be in Accra, how do you handle such situations? Because it's a daily occurrence.
Yes, we try to explain to those influential people. But we try to explain to them and try also to allow the policy work, the programs that are designed out of the law, work. Otherwise, the relevance of national service will be eroded, and we don't want the beautiful policy to be abused so as to demean its irrelevance. And so we try as much, but many people will not be happy with the position, the principles that we take. But I think Ghana appreciates what we are doing, and we take consolation in that. We are encouraged by the even personnel themselves trying to indicate to you that we want to go and see how life is over there. And so we are moving on.
Is it everyone who should do the national service?
No, not everyone. If you are Ghanaian, you are 18 years and you have the privilege of tertiary education, you are obliged by the law to undertake your national service.
Has there ever been the situation where you were not able to post all qualified potential personnel?
No. In actual fact, we get more requests than we have to deploy. This year, for instance, we have a request coming for over 81,000 service personnel. We have just about 63,000 to deploy. So every year there is deficit. And that is why we sometimes even engage volunteers to support the very thorny area, education, which government see as its prime obligation.
In cases where you get the deficits, what happens to the rest?
Well, when we get deficit in terms of vacancies that we are not able to fill, we write to those organizations that we are unable to satisfy all the requests they are demanding, and hoping that then for the subsequent years we'll be able to. As you know, in the last 2 years or 3 years, the personnel intake in terms of enrollment rose from 31,000 to 65,000, and that is very huge. And as and when, every year the number keeps rising, maybe because of the numbers that are turning from our tertiary institution. As you know, we have over 50 or 70 both public and private tertiary institutions in Ghana now, and they are coming out with a lot of graduates. So is the demand also for personnel.
Previously, secondary school graduates were posted. What about if some are available for posting? Is the law against it?
Yes, you know, at the time that secondary school graduates were posted, we had the 5-year senior secondary school program and the 2-year sixth form. That brings the age beyond 18 or 21. And now, with the introduction of the reform in 1988, the year for those who complete senior secondary school reduced drastically and will not make it good for them to be enrolled on the national service scheme. And that is why they make it post tertiary. You should finish your tertiary education, so you are physically and psychologically fit to undergo your national service.
But some SS graduates are over 18.
They are over 18, but government, in its wisdom, thinks that being over 18 not necessarily means that you can undertake the rigorous challenge of national service. The policy allow them to complete their post-tertiary program before they are enrolled. And I think it's going on well. Even those who finish the tertiary institution are seen as very feeble and young, and we don't want to reduce the age to the level of senior secondary school or senior high school level.
All right, Vincent, let's hold it here. Mm. Boniface Gambila is a former director of the National Service Scheme, and he has also joined us on the line. Good evening. What progress have you seen the service chalked up over the past few years?
Good evening. Can you speak louder, please?
What progress have you seen the service chalked up over the past few years?
There has been a lot of progress because the way National Service is structured, it's an organization that contributes so much into the national system. It's just that people don't realize it. The continual use of service personnel in the government institutions and private institutions has an economic value and has energy pumped into businesses or government work. So far, I would say that the progress has been consistent.
Do you see any gaps in the operation of the scheme?
Any gaps?
Yes.
What exactly would you want to say about gaps?
Anything that you have identified.
Oh, okay. Over the years, I think the intentions and purposes for setting up the scheme, one, provide skills and work culture attitudes to young persons of the country, provide a kind of temporal gap for young people to plan their future, provide the opportunity for young people to learn what is the real working world, and to make a difference and begin to understand benefits they have taken from their parents and the sufferings their parents have gone through to support them to the stage they have reached, beyond tertiary level. And then when people begin to realize all this, then they put value into what they do. And then they begin to understand the national economy, begin to understand the administration of the system, and then they can respond to things towards that. Then young people begin to understand what patriotism means, what can we contribute into our country, and not necessarily waiting for what the country can give us every day. And this issue of give us this for free, do this for free, that mentality begins to change. Now, this thing is a bit still on the surface, and I think that is something we need to look at. The other situation we can, the gap we can look at is after national service, what next? That gap, we have not been able to bridge it as at now. And I have always thought our program should be enhanced in a way that we make a connection between the national service scheme, the national service personnel, and industry, and various organizations. So two things could be done. The Ministry of Manpower or Ministry of Human Resources of this country could begin to link up with the private sector and the government institutions to identify the kind of work vacancies that exist, and then have a simple tool, a common pipeline where this information can be available, so that we can match link the national service to the industry and to the government offices or private institutions who need workers, labor, at the end of each year. Then we don't have service personnel having completed service now jumping about looking for work. They jump about looking for work because everything is just hanging in the air. And this is what has been happening since the inception of the national service. You know, in the very early days, you finish national service, and it was like the organization would retain you. It's like, it was like you could find an organization advertising for staff. And accepting the national service year as a working experience is very important. Now, this is one thing that the gap that is still existing. linking and match the service personnel, the service organization, to industry, so that there will be a flow of labor filling various vacancies. The second thing I think that still exists is the total or comprehensive provision of skills and knowledge and competencies to service personnel. This is ongoing, like the volunteer program. People are learning teaching skills, and people are learning how to do agriculture, where, you know, this kind of resource centers, how to do piggery. You know, those things are kind of skills people learn.
All right.
But how can we enhance this on a sustainable base? In areas where I have experience, organizations like the private sector who benefit from the use of service personnel, quasi government organizations and public sections who benefit from the use of service personnel could have had a common pool where resources will be put in, and that resource would be used for the training and the development of
All right, Mr. Yes. Boniface Gambila, thanks for your time. Boniface Gambila is a former director of the National Service Scheme. Now back to you, Vincent.
Yes.
This is from Kombi and Jirapa. He said, what is happening to the National Volunteering Program this year?
Well, the voluntary program is actually a complement of the mandatory program. As you know, as I said earlier, the numbers for the mandatory program keep rising. This year, for instance, we have over 60,000 mandatory service personnel, and the budget was to cater for 65,000. And so we had only 5,000 to top up. We do not want to engage many people that government cannot pay, even the living allowance, and that can even kill the program. So we are able to meet what government budget is able to provide for. And so if the intake is reducing, it's as a result of the escalating numbers of the mandatory personnel that we have. But the program is ongoing.
Then this one also says, I'm a service person in GBC. Mm. I haven't received my allowance since I started service. What could be wrong?
I don't believe that. If you are a service personnel and you are at post, and you your supervisor signs your assessment that you have worked, then your metropolitan director should pay you. And as I speak to you now, those who have worked diligently are being processed, and they are receiving their February allowance.
How regular are their allowance?
Very regular, as even workers on the government payrolls are paid.
Now let's talk about this. The scheme has entered into another phase in agriculture. Mm. How is this progressing?
Well, the agriculture component did not start yesterday. It used to be since 1973. I inherited a farm at North Legon, where there was some pigs and a few birds and some fish ponds. We have doubled that. In some area, we've quadrupled that. And also remember the government's medium-term development program. Talk about what we call modernized agriculture, and getting the youth to get interested in agriculture because of the aging population of our farmers. And the law mandates us to undertake youth programs. If you look at Section 3 of Act 426, it says that the scheme shall engage in youth programs. So if government instituted youth in agriculture program, it was just prudent that the National Service Scheme as a youth organization take advantage of it. This is our second year, and as you read out, it's been very overwhelming, and I want to commend the personnel who have taken up the challenge to volunteer their time and work on this farm. It's amazing that you find personnel who have completed their period of service in August register to volunteer and work on the farm up to December. And it's been very overwhelming. We have some even who are still working on the farms, trying to organize the farm for this major season, free of charge, and shows the commitment of our young graduates to showcase what their potentials are. So it's been very overwhelming. Government has also been supporting in the area of tractor acquisition, fertilizer, seeds, and even weedicides. And these are some of the incentives we get from government that is encouraging us to go into the program.
Is that why you are donating so much?
Well, we are not donating. We sell at a very subsidized price. The 50 kilogram bag of maize, we are told by Charles, sells at around 685 Ghana Cedi and 70 Ghana Cedi. But we are selling at 35 Ghana Cedi, so that the students remain in the classroom and learn. In most cases, what the middlemen do with our school administrators is one that sometimes do not help the schools, help the kids to stay long in the schools. And we think with this gesture, it will help supplement the food intake of our children who are in the secondary school. You know, as you learn more in the classroom, you eat more. So we had to encourage our students to take nutritious food so they can learn more and produce good results and encourage us to live healthy life.
I guess you have a more viable interest in the agriculture. So how are you attracting more service personnel to go into that area?
Well, what we do at our level is to provide leadership, and if the leaders who are managing the scheme are showing interest in the program, it stands to reason that personnel who are supposed to follow our examples also will show, and basically that's what we do. There is no difference between the director of national service and the service personnel on the farm. We all work because what we are nurturing is the crop, and it's not personalities that we show up there. And in this case, our farms are also managed by the Ministry of Agric officials. They are there to provide technical support and also provide skill training for our personnel. It is like Boniface said, the scheme is also to provide skilled manpower to our youths. As they work on the farm, they learn to farm, and that is one hidden objective that we do not highlight more often.
There are some who might not have the benefit of education up to the tertiary level, so how can they be helped with the existing farms?
Oh, we engage some youth in the communities where these farms are as volunteers. We want them to also see the beauty in farming and also show that even if graduates from our university are into agriculture, then how much less them. And so in Ejura, for instance, where we started this in the last 2 years, the district chief executive and the disassembly attest to the numbers of our young people in those communities who are multiplying in the agricultural production. And in Branam, in Komenda, in Ewutu Chochwe, and else in Anyaboni, in the eastern region, we engage community youth along school work alongside our graduates, and it's been very encouraging.
How do you see the scheme in the next 5 years?
Oh, we see the scheme engage in many other areas, not only food crop production. We are into fisheries, we are into piggery, we are into poultry. With the support we are getting from government, we hope the scheme would venture into other areas other than even agriculture. We are talking about helping salt production, for instance. People are talking to us and saying that we can do it. And we, with that can do spirit, we hope we would venture into other areas that the youth already are interested in. And we will bring some finesse to these areas.
Talking about those who've completed their service and then they are out there, they are not working. What is your advice for them?
We want like one distinguished personality in this country said, Dr. Ajikum, who is the chief executive of Kama Group of Companies, said, if a graduate is selling roasted plantain on the roadside, he will know how to manage that better. I want to encourage our graduates not to look only to offices for jobs. They should explore areas that are non-formal, where people used not to go. And that is why we encourage our graduates to go to the rural areas and see what challenges there is there and opportunities that they can take off, and they will be able to have completed your tertiary education. You are empowered enough to explore areas that are not readily seen by many people. And that I will encourage every graduate to look into.
All right, many thanks for your time. That was the Executive Director of the National Service Scheme, Vincent Kwagbenu, who was with me in the studio. And now these are some of your text messages. Adam Tamale, where is the probity and accountability being turned down the throat of Ghanaians? NDC is getting me disappointed. Oforiata Bilimpe, let's stop the pettiness in our politics and let the institutions do their job. And we apologize for our inability to bring you the story on the Northern Star Tomato Factory. The lines were not going through. And with that, we draw the curtains on tonight's edition of Behind the News. Bobby Nikwe was our sound engineer. My production team have been Kingsley Obinchere, Christopher Esiedu, Phyllis Kofi, Bright Agama, and John Poby. Iram Donko was my summarizer. My name is Agatha Samoa, and good night.